Moldova, that small Eastern European country which recently gained a lot of media attention in the wake of the Russian war against Ukraine. Really, a lot has happened in Moldova over the past weeks. The country with 2.6 million inhabitants recently welcomed over 400,000 refugees. In March, it applied for membership to the European Union, and the instability in the separatist region Transnistria, backed by the Russians, is actually reason for concern. Let's shed some light on recent developments in Moldova.
Global Perspectives, a podcast series in the service of democracy, peace, and development around the world.
Welcome to our latest episode of Global Perspectives. My name is Verena Casirie, and for today's episode, I have two Moldovan security experts on board. A very warm welcome to Julian Groza and Denis Cinușa, and thanks for being with me today. My first question goes to Julian Groza, who formerly served as Deputy Minister for European Integration and is Executive Director at the Institute for European Policies and Reforms. Julian, the Republic of Moldova faces one of its biggest challenges since independence. The country is on the brink of a humanitarian and economic crisis, and actually experiences a direct threat of a Russian aggression. So how does the pro-European government face these challenges?
Well, first of all, the EU and the entire Eastern neighborhood are going through major challenges posed by Russia's unjustified and brutal war against Ukraine. It is also a huge challenge for Moldova. Even though Moldova is not under military aggression today, it has been, however, for years under Kremlin's hybrid aggression, targeting our population through disinformation and propaganda. Significant part of our political actors are turned into proxies, and 12% of Moldovan territory is illegally occupied by Russia. Well, Moldova indeed has filed an application to become a member of the European Union, and this decision has been taken in exceptional circumstances. Of course, it was a response to the war. The whole European project is a response to war on the European continent, and it's only logical that in this context, the right response is to do the same. That's why the EU exists. But this step fully corresponds as well with Moldova's long-standing European aspirations and strategic European choice. All national actors, government, civil society, business, and majority of the citizens are willing to put in all the necessary work to move towards becoming part of the big European family. Today, Moldova faces multiple crises: the COVID pandemic's impact, the economic downturn, the energy crisis, Russia's war against Ukraine, which multiplied that, also through the humanitarian crisis. This puts a lot of pressure on the country, on the government. Now, as a result of multiple crises, Moldova is registering one of the highest inflation rates in Europe, beyond 25%. But regardless of the level of prosperity, Moldovan government, society behave like Europeans. Solidarity is one of the pillars of the United Europe. Moldova not only speaks about solidarity, but practices it. Moldova has welcomed the Ukrainian refugees in their homes. Last summer, Moldova deployed in Greece firefighters to help friends in need to extinguish fires. So Moldova may have little resources, but has will to share them with other European states.
So you talked about plenty of challenges, but I would love to take a closer look at the situation in Transnistria. A little bit of history here. Moldova is actually a relatively young country and only gained sovereignty in 1991 after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And it is particularly due to this legacy that the eastern part known as Transnistria broke away and remains, well, a source of instability for both Moldova and the region. So at this point, let's bring in Denis Cinușa here. Denis is national team leader at the Center for European Policy Studies and a researcher at the Justus Liebig University Gießen. Denis, what is the current security situation in Moldova with regards to the events in Transnistria?
Well, from the very beginning, Moldova has been looking cautiously at what is going on in the Transnistrian region, knowing that this uncontrolled territory is actually loyal to Moscow and could be used at some point against, first of all, against the security interest of Moldova, but also against Ukraine. Therefore, Transnistria has been viewed as a potential risk from the very beginning. So it's not something that have been taken into account or into consideration only lately. The problem is that what has been a big issue is that the groups of interest within Transnistrian region started to or attempted to destabilize the region and creating additional concerns about which are the threats coming from the region. Therefore, when in the middle of April and at the end of April and the beginning of May, the explosions and other incidents which were targeting the critical infrastructure in the Transnistrian region, those events they have actually sparked the interest for the Transnistrian region, and at the same time they have risen the interest for Moldova itself, because before that it was believed that only if Russia is reaching Odessa, then that could be the moment of difficulty for Moldova. But when the situation starts to worsen in the Transnistrian region in terms of stability and security, then the discussion has changed slightly, and we have been seeing questions about could Russia actually target and attack Moldova from the Transnistrian region. So the region has been seen not only as a threat for Ukraine, as a potential way of opening another front against Ukraine, but also as a place from where Russia could attack Moldova. So that was the game changer. When the provocation started in the Transnistrian region, this question has been asked in Moldova and also in the international community, including in Germany.
So, Dennis, you're essentially saying that there is a lot of destabilizing potential within Transnistria for the entire region. Julian, let me get back to you. In case of an imminent threat of a Russian invasion, maybe started from Transnistria, what should or could the Moldovan government do to protect its independence and its people?
The unsolved Transnistrian conflict is indeed a source of huge insecurity and instability. For years, it has been like that. 30 years ago, we had the war in Transnistrian region, backed by Russia. Well, after the war ended with a peace deal with Russia, we have this Transnistrian conflict settlement process. Germany has played an important role to contribute to confidence building between Chisinau and Tiraspol. EU as a whole contributed a lot in this sense. Currently, over 3,000 businesses from Transnistrian region trade internationally. 70% of the exports are directed to the European Union. All this is thanks to the association agreement and DCFTA with the European Union that is applied on the entire territory of Moldova, including the Transnistrian region. Putting all that together, we see that economic connectivity of the region with the EU plays an important role in putting pressure on the local leaders to stay out of the war. From the very first day, local political and economic elites are sending clear signals that they are not a threat to anyone and they want peace. Well, the recent provocations in the region, of course, raised the internal anxiety in Moldova. It also distracted the attention of Ukrainian army from the active war zone in Donbas. But it also raised concerns of escalation of the war towards Moldova. Even though less probable for now, this cannot be excluded. However, the key immediate risk of the illegal Russian military presence and Russian control of their proxies in the region is that provocations may be used to internal destabilization in the entire territory of Moldova. One more final point. The war in Ukraine exposed vulnerabilities of Moldova's security and defense system. That is very much because for years, strengthening defense capabilities was not a top priority of previous governments. Moldova's neutrality was misused by political elites as an argument for that. But being neutral means, in fact, that you, as a country, need to have effective instruments and capacities to defend and enforce it. And we already know for a fact that maybe neutrality works in times of peace, but not in times of war. So this means that Moldova has to continue to rely on support of international partners to preserve its neutrality by forcing Russia to withdraw its troops from our territory, help to monitor the security situation in this region, deter and discourage potential Russian escalation, and help Moldova to increase its defense capabilities, including through NATO Partnership for Peace program.
So you've touched a lot of pertinent issues that are on the agenda for Moldova, and you have also said or sketched an approximation of the country to the European Union. And we know that Moldova has taken very active steps to EU membership and submitted its applications. So Denis, could you maybe tell us what are the expectations of the Moldovan government and the Moldovan people on the path to EU membership?
Well, I think that it's very important to mention that Moldova has made the decision to apply for the EU candidate status after Ukraine, and also in the context of a similar decision made by Georgia. So although the so-called associated trio is not really functioning as a platform for synchronizing or coordinating the actions between the three countries that have association agreements with the EU since 2014, when Ukraine has applied for this candidate status, it was obvious that this is a signal for the other two countries, Moldova and Georgia, to do the same. So taking into account that we speak about a wave of applications for EU candidate status in Eastern Partnership region of the European Union, we understand that the stakes are very high, and we don't speak only about reforms, but also about security and geopolitical situation and how the EU is positioning itself in the region towards these three countries. So Moldova is part of a bigger picture. Therefore, of course, it is important to underline that the authorities have read correctly the trends in the region and have used the right, let's say, the right decisions at the right point and in the right moment in order to not lose this opportunity, because we speak about a very unique window of opportunity for the enlargement itself of the European Union to the East. And therefore, this kind of external context is very useful for the authorities to talk to the population. That of course is pro-European. The latest polls that have been published show that more than 50% are supporting the EU accession. This is of course important, but there are the current crises which could probably make the government less efficient in communicating with the population, because the population is also distracted by social economic issues like inflation, other issues, high prices for energy resources, including the insecurity that is coming from the Transnistrian region. And all of that, of course, create a certain environment of anxiety inside the society. But I believe that having in mind that the regional context is still favorable for Moldova to obtain a candidate status, the government has the chance to use the existing support in the society to convince Brussels that there is legitimacy, there is enough legitimacy, there is popularity for the EU accession, and that this is something that should be given today, not tomorrow, in order not to lose, as I mentioned, this window of opportunity.
That sounds very ambitious, sophisticated to join the EU and to gain candidate status. But the path might actually be quite stony, right? There are some countries that have had candidate status for almost a decade. I mean, let's think of Albania, a candidate since 2014. So let me ask a little bit further. What challenges do you actually see on the country's way to join the European Union, Denis?
In my view, the most important The most important area where we see challenges is, of course, rule of law. And I believe that the decisions, the process of vetting the judges and the prosecutors, which is now in the beginning of its, let's say, development as a mechanism and as a process, is something that could bring some results that will convince, first of all, the population that the state institutions in Moldova are not corrupt and that they function for the good of the public, because this is the most important mission of the current government, to actually convince the society that Moldova can function as a state, and that this means that the population should not leave the country. It can actually feel not only secure, but also prosper in within the current, let's say, statehood of Moldova. And other issues that are also tackled by the current government and are also about the, let's say, about the consolidation of the state is the energy security. The diversification of the supplies of gas, first and foremost, is something that has been always on the top of the on the top of the agenda of the pro-reform and pro-EU forces in Moldova. But this is becoming a reality only now. It still will take a couple of years to really obtain tangible results, and this will depend very much on how the how Moldovan authorities, together with the Romanian colleagues, will manage to really create the possibility of making the gas, the purchasing of gas from Romania attractive and at prices that will actually be convenient for the public in Moldova. Because currently we have the infrastructure that is already built, but because the prices are so high, it is still not profitable, let's say, to buy gas from Romania. What is also very important for Moldova, and here I think that my colleague Julian will subscribe to that, is to actually fulfill the goal of having the electricity interconnection with Romania. That will allow Moldova to have access to not only reliable sources of power from Romania, which is a friendly country to Moldova, that's an important aspect to mention, but also to have less expensive electricity that could be again favorable for Moldovan economy, and also could again give more sense of sovereignty, energy sovereignty, autonomy of the country from Russia and from Transnistrian region, which, as Julian already mentioned, is a place from where Moldova is obliged in a way to buy power because it doesn't have other alternatives. I think that these are the most important two areas of reforms. But of course, what has been mentioned already, the resilience of the country to shocks, to internal shocks and external shocks, the management of the crisis is something that the country should work on in order to prepare the country for future challenges. Because I believe that the current Russian aggression against Ukraine is only a beginning of a series of challenge of clashes between geopolitical actors in the region.
So the EU is actually not the only alliance that is currently up for discussion. I think it was mentioned earlier already that there is a discussion generally happening right now on NATO membership all around European countries. Julian, let's talk a little bit about the NATO. Sweden and Finland recently abandoned their long-saved neutrality and submitted applications to join. Should Moldova also ditch neutrality and join NATO?
Well, in Moldova, for a long time, the neutrality was, and to some extent continues to be, considered as a security guarantee, as opposed to NATO accession. But as mentioned previously, the issue of neutrality has not benefited from an informed debate in Moldova, addressing all aspects of what neutrality means in real terms. Another aspect of it refers to the public perception towards NATO accession, which is still around 25% in Moldova. The war in Ukraine is already influencing these perceptions in both directions. On one side, there are more and more people who are thinking that Moldova would need a NATO umbrella to deter and protect itself from Russia's aggression. But there are others who would reconsider that option given the hesitation of accepting Ukraine into NATO for too long time, which was used by Russia as a pretext for invasion. In any case, what Moldova needs today is first and foremost an improved communication to public about options and costs of ensuring national security. Politicians need to come up with solutions on how to do that. And we need a serious discussion about the security sector reform. Moldova needs to develop its defense and security capabilities. That's a must. Even though neutral countries today, just like Moldova, we cannot compare Finland's and Sweden's defense and security system to the one that we have today. So this means that Moldova needs to prioritize defense and security spending and improve our capabilities with the support of international partners.
So the example of Ukraine has actually taught us sometimes to think maybe through the worst case scenario. Dennis, let's do a what if. If Moldova were actually not to join NATO, how can the neutrality status be guaranteed or secured, considering also the presence of Russian troops on its territory?
That's a very good question, because we have only two options. Or we beef up our neutrality with clear capacity of defense, or we need to join NATO. Joining NATO is quite problematic because we know what happened to Ukraine and Georgia. They were promised to become, but they were attacked by Russia before this happened. So the second option is, of course, to invest in a strong neutrality, which means strong defense capacities, which also means possibility to control the territories of the borders of the country, which is not really possible when you have a separatist conflict, a breakaway region, which is controlled by a country that is considered by the majority in the region, if not the entire continent, maybe except Hungary and Serbia, as an aggressor, as a country that is not to be trusted in terms of security and security guarantees. So talking about neutrality, in my view, is something that Moldova can already do and is to some extent doing when we speak about the assistance which is provided by the EU through the peace facility program. And this is something that can be extended so that different areas of defense capacities of the country can be covered, not only the military health system or the engineers that are demanding. So we can really be more creative, and we can learn from the experience of Ukraine, which has been also provided different assistance through this through the same instrument, and look what it is worth it for Moldova and how that this could be done, which is the time frame, and which will be the contribution of the Moldovan side, because we should be aware that Moldova should also contribute to its own defense and to its own national security. This could be one thing that can be done, and there is already instrument existing for that. And more than that, it's also about the interest of the European Union to really use its, even the Treaty of the EU, the Article 42.7, which is talking about the collective support in case of war against one of the member states. So I think that this kind of approach should be also used for those who are becoming the candidate states or are already in the process of accession. And the second is what Julian already mentioned. It's about the current possibilities which are given by the bilateral cooperation with NATO. And I know for sure that there are member states in NATO which are offering support to Moldova in terms of resilience, in various fields. So we have these options. They are open. It's only about the capacity of the government to actually use them and use them as fast as possible. Because as you mentioned, we are dealing with a high unpredictability, and we don't know if the pessimist scenarios are going to unfold. And if that will happen, what will be the reaction, the capacities of Moldova to react properly and actually protect itself?
A very, very big thank you to you, Julian and Dennis, for your time and especially your patience to explain these complex issues surrounding Moldova. Dear friends and listeners, thanks for tuning in. If you like this podcast, you can share this episode on your channels and don't forget to subscribe to the Global Perspectives podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Deezer. My name is Verena Kasirje and I hope you will join us again for our next episode of Global Perspectives.
Global Perspectives, a podcast by the Hans Seidel Foundation.